We're happy to have all of you with us, and there seems to be technical challenges this evening in more than one place in the country, but right now I'm on. I'm not sure how long I will be. We have Carolyn, who is without power right now, but hopefully she will be back on here in a little while, too. So, and our guest the second hour is Michael King, who we've had before, and he has a spiritual message that he's going to be bringing to us. So, Angel Sue, I pass the talking stick to you.
Thank you, and I'm enjoying some challenges as well. So I ask you to choose yourself as the divine child yet again. And so we're going to welcome everybody in the light of the most radiant one and in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ. And we're invoking those loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame. And so as you breathe, intend that your support team is with you, and that, oh, so many loving hearts support you from many sources, and that that loving respect for who you are, that every breath that you take, you can intend and know that divine love unconditionally is flowing into you from all aspects of creation, and that your gratitude will multiply with the out-breath and reach every cell and every atom that it encounters, duplicating itself and magnifying itself. And so with this intention that we're using, we're just going to think about the people that we claim in our lives, our situations and circumstances, and know that together in the oneness, the Owati, ask that all will find their perfect, divine, happy solution. And so we're going right directly to the original law of creation, the law of one. And so we welcome in all those that are connected in with us and our situations, all those beings known and unknown, seen and unseen, for those that we claim in our lives, for those that we're aware of, for all the circumstances and situations, because we are one with all there is, Owati. And we are going to ask that the known and unknown, seen and unseen, join with us as we celebrate these changes, these welcome resets, Nasara Nasara, the Reformation Act, our Faction 3 White Knights, our Galactic Forces of Light, our whistleblowers, our media people, all those that are weaving the energies to bring forth this new reality, harmony, happiness, healing, throughout all time and space. And so with this, we say, welcome, and we are all one. And when one is harmed, then all are harmed, yet as one is helped, then all are helped, and we're claiming miracles and healing, heaven on earth. And in the name of who we are, and we know we are one with all there is, we ask that only the highest good of all concern happen here, and we give our intention that this will be lifted up beyond our understanding, that the avatars, the masters, the angels, all those that are weaving these energies, keep perfecting it beyond our understanding, beyond the beauty and the miracles, the magic, the wonderment that we can begin to claim at this time, that it keep being improved. And with grateful hearts and 13 thank yous, we're going to say, thank you, so be it, and so it is. And now we're going to close by saying, all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one, and we choose to live our love like heaven. So be it, and I pass that talking stick back.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue. We appreciate you opening the call for us, and it looks like that I'm still on here, so we'll see what happens. I found something this week that I would like to share, and it's called Lifting and Leaning. There are two kinds of people on Earth today, just two kinds of people, no more, I say. Not the good and the bad. For 'tis well understood, the good are half bad and the bad are half good, but not the happy and the sad. For the swiftly flying years bring each man his laughter and each man his tears. Not the rich and the poor, for to count a man's wealth, you must first know the state of his conscience and health. Not the humble and the proud, for in life's busy span, who puts on vain airs is not counted a man. Not the two kinds of people on earth, I mean, are the people who lift and the people who lean. Wherever you go, you will find the world's masses are ever divided in just these two classes. And strangely enough, you will find, too, there is only one lifter to 20 who lean. In which class are you? Are you easing the load of overtaxed lifters who toil down the road? Or are you a leaner who lets others hear your portion of worry and labor and care? So this was something Ellen Wilcox had sent me, and I thought it was a good way to think. And we're talking about health and wealth. You know, it's the old thing about we squander health in search of wealth, and then we scheme and toil and save, then squander wealth in search of health, and all we get's a grave. We live and boast of what we own. We die and only get a stone. So it was like just pay attention to how you're going through life, and we don't judge it good or bad. We just know that that's how life is. And we have a second hour tonight. We have Michael King, and, you know, we've had him before. He always has a good message for us. And if I get dropped off, Kathy will be doing the interview for that. So, Kathy, did you have anything that you wanted to say?
I do. Thank you, Marita. Listen, everyone, many of you probably do know that February 1st is Monday, and the great troubadour, who is the gentleman that does the, he goes to all the different countries. He spends his time singing.
I know who
James
you're talking
about. James Twyman. Yes. Well, he is doing this thing, and he is asking for a world peace prayer to everyone to just take a full 10 minutes of pure intention to send the light, to send the energy of love, to just call in peace in whatever way that is personal and right for you, to bring those Syrian refugees and families. There's such loss. There's such tremendous pain. And he's choosing not to say right away what time, but he's going to be putting it out in email to anyone who will go to his site. And I'm not sure what it is. Just Google James Twyman, T-W-Y-M-A-N, and take that if you could, responsibility, personal responsibility to join in. He said, I'm not sure what this experiment will bring. We're just choosing to know that all of us, being one, can make a difference. And why not? We're going there. We're going to be up front and center. We're choosing a place to be that we haven't announced. We may not announce it, but we will give you a time. And if you don't have the time, it won't matter, because the energy around the world and everybody's personal place will be to grab that 10 minutes and quickly, in the middle of your day, whatever point in place and time it is, to give spirit the opportunity to hear your voice, to hear your energy, to add to the global unity consciousness of healing for everyone in Syria and anywhere else that you feel important. But that's his global reach, the Syrian crisis there and losses there. So I ask that everyone, if you feel it in your heart, to join in. That would be an important day to do that, February 1st, this coming Monday.
Thank you, Kathy. Sure. Many of us have known James Twyman for a long time. My grandson went out, I think now back, he wasn't even 18 yet, and I let him drive all the way out to the West Coast go to James Twyman's place, and he ended up going on with their whole group on a cruise. He's done a lot of helping people for many, many years, and it's been an opportunity for people that have maybe not looked at religion it's maybe looking at things in a different way. And being the singing troubadour, you know, he might be able to reach people that are not reachable in another way. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, for sure.
So. Okay, do we have a Carolyn yet? Is she available, or do we know?
BBS has not tried her again. Maybe BBS in the background, if you feel like you want to quickly try, call Carolyn one more time.
And if we don't reach her, then we'll just wait and let her call in when she gets power again.
Okay.
She has an electrician there trying to fix things, but... Mm-hmm. And I choose to know why all of this, why we get to have these experiences, but it's all okay.
Mm-hmm.
Our dear Omina is healing from her knee surgery. She's having some challenges with pain, but it's recovery time for her. So we might all just say a quick prayer and helping to have the healing angels work with her and know that her surgery is healed and that the pain be lifted. So, and she will be back with us the third Thursday here. So, okay, I don't see any movement there with Carolyn. Tara and Rama, let's go ahead and go you and see what kind of an overview that you've got of the most important things that have happened here. And also, Rama, tell us who you talk to. That's always things that people enjoy hearing. So pass the talking stick to you.
Greetings.
Greetings, greetings to you too.
Greetings, everybody. I was trying to see if I could do something for Carolyn, but I'm not exactly sure I'd get it right. 13. Oh, we'll just have to let it go.
Tara, while Rama's talking, if you find that you can pull something together there about the Mayan calendar, you can go ahead and work on that while he's talking, and then we'll come back to you when he's finished if you want to do that.
I'll try to play with my fingers. go ahead, Rama. Here, hold
okay.
on. Wait. We got to put this wire out of the way. Okay.
Oh, first of all, I'd like to say we are still needing help with the rent. And those sorts of things and the bills coming up.
Yeah, we need at least $350 yet to have the rent.
Yeah.
Today's the 28th. It's a little scary. And if somebody can email us and say, you know, let us know, that would, you know, it's 3 days away that we need to have this. Okay, Sam, thank you.
Give your email out there.
Coran999@comcast.net.
Okay. Coran is K-O-R-A-N.
999@comcast.net. And today I spoke earlier this morning. I took a little ride up the mountain and I talked with these crystalline snowflake entities, and it was just very interesting because how they interact with you is they make solfeggio tones and they communicate with sound frequencies, and these crystalline snowflakes are about 14 feet tall, and they physically show up, and they look like Dr. Emoto's snowflakes in the pictures. And they resonate. How they communicate is the series of the from 528 hertz all the way up to the top of the solfeggio tones, where only cats and dogs and ETs can hear those tones, I could say. And they were talking about how the frequencies are changing so radically on the planet, and the energies pouring in from our sun, as well as all the other astrological and astronomical events going on. And this is a coordinated effort, you might say, of all of legions upon legions of heaven. And it has everything to do with the downfall of the 13 families, who we are literally watching them tear each other's hair out with false stories, and I mean, quite literally, it is like what some of the messages are saying out there. We could be seeing the crash of 2016.
Like Tom Hartman's book title.
That's right.
It's inevitable.
It has to go down, yes. And it's not going to be brought up with any other so-called stories that have to do with global collateral accounts or global currency resets or anything else.
Yeah, no President Dunford's either. I mean,
yeah.
Dunford's.
General Dunford is not the current president.
He's also acting treasonous ways right now.
That is an absolute lie. And this ties in with what Natasha, I talked with her today, as well as these crystalline snowflake beings. Everything that's going on right in this little slice of time right now has to do with full disclosure that has already kind of taken place on Fox Network with the X-Files, and it's kind of ironic that, you know, they have Mr. Hare as their so-called poster boy.
And all over MSNBC, they're covering Donald Trump in his separate place. They're not covering anything about
Bernie
debate
or anything else. It is all Mr. Hare. And what this is about is complete distraction
that?
Of, you know, the people's consciousness, which is also part of programs to separate the mind from the heart.
It's called, you know, the prime directive is being defiled right here, because it says non-intervention in a civilization's development unless in case of nuclear holocaust or psychic holocaust. And that's exactly what we're getting. We're getting psychic holocaust here. And
yeah, through the transmission box in the airwaves. And blaze the violet fire throughout all of these so-called debates, because they're not debates. What they are is propaganda from the Nazi corporate death machines.
That's exactly what it is. And last Tuesday, just to reiterate that, the King of Swords left a text message because Rama couldn't go out because he had his car being fixed.
Yeah.
But the message was, Mr. 19.5 degrees merged with El Moria has this in his hands. This is a message from Mr. 19.5 degrees El Moria. Watch the X-Files. It will answer a lot of your questions. It's all new. It's very interesting. They're talking about full disclosure and other things around that. And bring up 10 billion more questions, which is a good thing. Like my father said, this is 19.5 degrees speaking, meaning like my father Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. And then Mr. 19.5 degrees continued and added, within the office of the Christ and only in the office of the Christ. And then the King of Swords went on and said, everything right now looks like the worst of times, yet we are in the best of times.
Yes. So, and how Natasha continued this today is she showed me on her pad how Nibiru is in influence and orbit in our solar system, along with this 10th planet as well, that they're calling quote-unquote Nemesis, but, you know, that's a bit of a controversy.
Is that what they did? They named it that?
Yeah, there are stories out there that it's being called Nemesis.
Oh, dear.
And it's, you know, 10 times larger than, you know, Jupiter and Saturn. And this also ties in with a story of the blue avians, and they came in earlier in the last couple of years with ships larger than Jupiter, larger than Saturn and Neptune.
Well, and they didn't come in too far.
No, they were seen beyond the orbit of Neptune, and these ships are humongous. And all of this is about what the blue avians are saying. We are taking our destiny in our own hands, and we are meeting ourselves at this critical juncture to change the course of the story here.
Yeah, the blue avians, they say the majority of humanity have forgotten who they are.
Yes.
So rise now, allowing in every moment the message of your heart to govern all of your lives. Even as in the beginning, this inner voice, this power of knowing is weak. Please follow it. Test the waters. See as it will become stronger every day. It must happen now. And we have always known that you were destined to live an inspired, happy life from the inside out, no matter what. However, you despaired at one time and since believed that you have been an error and gave up. And your outer world is the mirror of that. Your doubt is in love was your fall. Overstand now that this was not your fault. Rather, consider it to be a test, how far you would go in your trust and self-love,
yes,
how strong your love was. So what the King has been saying, and Lady Master Nada and Natasha today, as has been saying, and this is very, this looks hard to believe, it's impossible, but they said the wheel of karma is ended. And that wheel of karma is what we're living through vicariously, the wishes of a few invading lizards,
yes,
who are portraying what they want you to fear. And again, there is no fault anyway, so we send them love. But the concept of polarity is also ended in that sense, as we're moving out of that polarity stage with the fifth dimension, because it merges the polar opposites into an androgynous state within and without. Therefore, we're living in a unified field, of a morphogenic field of unity consciousness. And Mother's saying that those are very, very, very much wounded, you might say, by being influenced in so many ways, that their ability to align with this new energy needs a little more time. They're literally being taken to other star planets and and sun systems, wherever that the energy is going to give them more time. And that's another thing, because that ends this idea that karma keeps going and going and going here. It's really tightening up the ship right now. Yes, Rama.
Natasha also said that as you take a look at what Fox, the network, did with the X-Files in the first episode of the two-parter, My Struggle, with what Mulder talks about, from everything to chemtrails to the geoengineering to the cloning of what's going on. And this is a piece that Katrina Vandenhoevel shared with me a while back. You know, Hillary, let's say that life form that is known as Hillary is about to be indicted. And this ties in with the FBI and the even larger stories that have to do with the Bush-Clinton crime family and the Khazarian Nazis over in that so-called country called Israel, which was stolen from the Palestinian people. And this also ties in with the Bundy Hammond story, where
Mormons,
which are Mormons, and the larger story about the Bundys, and the Oregon story is the Puyeh Indians are the original inhabitants of that land.
And we have a treaty that says that that's their land and we're not honoring it.
And the Bush-Clinton crime family want the uranium that's in the land there.
So they want to buy it.
That's why this whole fiasco going on with Mr. Bundy and his sons and the militia people and their guns and yada yada. And it's all about the violet flame. And I will say it again. Saint Germain is in charge of this seventh ray. He will not allow the uranium to be used to build new nuclear weapons. Ashtar has said, no nukes. The game that's being played right now at such a deep core level, it is called brinkmanship.
So did it,
and it's about the brinkmanship that's going on between Mr. Putin, Mr. Xi, Mr. Obama. The Bush-Clinton crime family are still playing in that realm of the idea of nuclear war. Yet what I mean by the words brinkmanship is, like it has been said by Ashtar and Sananda and others, all the nukes have been neutralized. What they're playing with is a shell game where you take the pea and you put it under the shell. And it's the sideshow story that's been going on since JFK, the clone, was taken out. And how many more times can we watch the shells being shuffled? There's no P under any of the three shells because they don't have it.
No, they don't. They don't have that threat that they kind of keep as a
That's
possibility.
Right. And the only thing that is, let's say, keeping the corporate death merchants under, you know, what they're using is the fear card with all the networks. And as they use that fear card, the networks get threatened. And I have heard Chris Hayes is on MSNBC, he is going to be pulled.
Who told you that?
Tom the Cat told me today.
He's playing with the red card very heavily, and it's just kind of shocking.
And it's interesting. Rachel Meadows may just be leaving, too. Where is she going to show up? With Keith Olbermann. And
where?
That is not being said. Yet
they're forcing them all to do this red card.
Yeah.
What does that mean, red card, guys? What does that mean?
It means playing the Nazi Republican stories on their full tilt boogie and not paying attention. For instance, when Bernie Sanders is being interviewed by Chris Hayes, Bernie Sanders is getting, you know, targeted really hard with hard questions, and and Chris Hayes doesn't have a smile on his face from beginning to end. And then when Hillary comes on there, he's grinning from ear to ear, and that's just like, this is all rigged in that sense.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Rachel did just a stellar job in Flint, Michigan yesterday.
Yes.
At the town meeting she carried on there with. And but then right after that on Lawrence O'Donnell, Michael Moore came on.
Yes.
And he took it farther. He told everybody Rachel has been on this, all over this from the, you know, and nobody else on the networks had been covering it. What does that tell you? He said, and he said that there's murder on the hands of Mr. Schneider, because the water brought another contaminant called a toxin that created Legionnaire's disease, and it killed 10 people so far. And there's over a couple of hundred people that have it, and it doesn't easily go away without threatening life. So we're on another story, and that's a whole other thing there. It's like we're in the period of the plagues right now. Like that that new Zika virus, that is a metallic mosquito drone. And they have
artificially created life form
in a laboratory along with the Zika virus and planting it in the West. And all these pregnant women, when they get bit, they get babies that are de-evolved.
Yes.
They have brain damage. They have much smaller heads than normal, and they're not developed. And they have all kinds of internal problems in their bodies. And there's already 13,000 babies just in Colombia alone. And there's 21 countries. I heard 22 already.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cases of it in the United States. The primary places are Florida, you know, the southern states. Florida, they've got some cases in Mississippi, Alabama, New Orleans, Texas, Hawaii, and they found some in Illinois. I don't know how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And today I hear the UN, I think it's the
UNESCO
predict that there's going to be 4 million cases of these babies born with this encephaly, which is a coming from not the original thing of the Zika, but it's showing up in the because of the virus hitting the placenta, crossing over, and the babies are being born with this condition. And there's another disease that I don't have the name of it right in front of me, but there's a whole bunch of people that are dying from it. It's a deadly disease that's coming out of this too. So we, you know, what the Blue Avians are saying, I can't imagine this is going to. It's just like they didn't quite succeed so well in Ebola over there with Mr. Mitch McConnell and his wife's husband, you know, helping that Ebola to get planted over there via his shipping company. And that was prearranged. And then they said they had a couple of more after they just barely announced that it was gone. And then there was this report from the World Health Organization that says, oh, it lays dormant and then it can start all over again. So you can see what you take. No, step back, and they're making an effort to reduce the human population. They're desperate because, first of all, they thought they were going to just go somewhere else, and we're on lockdown. We still are.
Yes, and
all of these things, they're traps.
Lisa Renee put a story out there about this, you know, what happened down in Sarasota, Florida, where the dark side tried to open up a stargate, and they could not open up a stargate with the weird weather patterns that created a major weather event. And let's just say, like I have been told for months now, Earth is on lockdown. The solar system is on lockdown. The only folks that are coming in are the interdimensional, hyperdimensional folks that are
wingmakers,
10 to 100 million years ahead of our present cultures and civilizations.
Yeah.
They don't need bodies. They show up as orbs, glowing spheres of light, just like the blue avians. Mm-hmm. They could end this overnight, but like they're saying, we are the ones. We take our destiny and do it. This is what the crystalline snowflake beings were telling me in their own way today, is that we take our destiny in our hands by working with love in the highest forms possible. It overrides all the fear stories that are going on. And that's all they are.
Did you know that there were some tornado warnings in Florida too all week?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one about Kathy. It was on the 17th of January, and that was an attempt by them manipulating that weather, a quote-unquote rare tornado with a very peculiar energy signature swept through Siesta Key, Florida. I wrote about this event.
This is a different
portion
of Florida that I'm talking about, because I have a friend down there, and the weather's just been horrible because of these tornado warnings.
Yeah, well, they're messing with the weather. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. And it has to be their final attempts at controlling the planet, the atmosphere, how we interact with each other. And let's say they've taken off more than they can chew, because the planet has its own self-defense mechanisms that are lined up with the galactics that have the ability to shut the whole story down. And it's like it's already being said in the X-Files. Full disclosure, how Mr. 19.5 Degrees gets up there and addresses it, one wonders, and I'm not being told. Yet, it also involves Mr. Putin and Mr. Xi, because they're all tied in together in this story.
But they're not really brinkmanshipping. What the ones under them are. Like over here, we've got Nazi collaborating Republicans and a full pile of them in the Democratic side, too. And I don't know what they call under directly, like our parliament, they call it something else because it's not a democracy over there under President Xi. But President Xi would be killed instantaneously, just like Obama, if he, Mr. Xi, didn't do exactly what that group is saying to do. And that's the same thing what's going on over here, you know, that committed treason, about 14 of them on the inauguration night in 2009. And the entire Republican Party, with the Koch brothers at the helm, have vowed to just completely put everything on him and make him do everything, like Hillary's in the mix with that. It's a very huge moment for galactic intervention. This is divine intervention. And a lot of folks are saying, why do we have to go through this, you know, now? And, I mean, it's kind of scary. And also, you know, for all practical purposes, this situation we're in appears that there is no free will choice at all. I mean, that's the truth about the way it has been going in terms of the behavior, right?
Yes.
Rama? How do you see the whole Hillary thing? How do you see that picturing with her? You know, she's going to be arrested. What do you give us some insights on how you see that happening?
There is more and more mounting evidence that's coming forward that so many different good agencies within our government have on her that has to do with her classified emails that go beyond top secret. It goes into cosmic clearance, like Master Sergeant Bob Dean. This goes into the realm of the Secret Space Command and the other things that E.T. Corey talks about and the black budgets Dr. Greer speaks about. And all of our members of Congress, aside from 64, they get approached by the lobbyists, by other folks that are connected with the Koch brothers, that are connected with other shadowy multinational death merchant corporations that, as you do our bidding, will handsomely reward you. Never mind the messy cleanup, we'll handle that. And that part is about folks going bye-bye in the midst of what they do. And everything has to do with how they have this blind adherence to their one idea, this end time story that they're in, that has to do with the Niebuhr ruins and the return of the Anunnaki, with the story about the gold, the white gold, the gold dust. Yet the part they're not saying is that we've already averted revelations. We've already averted all of these disaster end time stories, but they're playing it out through their fear realities right now.
Yeah.
How they're playing it out with the fear stories is the Zika virus, Mr. Trump pushing his Nazi agenda, Mike Huckabee basically declaring anybody that's gay or transgender or bi, they need to be executed summarily right now.
Natasha said that it's going to happen, everybody. And that's another reason why it's so important.
What's going to happen? I didn't understand that. She said what?
What is going to happen is the life forms that are perpetrating the darkness are going to be summarily executed.
Yeah.
Not the gay, bi, transgender people.
Okay.
Mike Huckabee is pushing that agenda to remove these people from the planet, along with Ted Cruz, along with many other folks who are pushing Leviticus, that, you know, I mean, this whole story that came out in the Phoenix journals, you know, that was channeled by a fake Hatton, not the real Hatton. I have spoken to Hatton face to face, like I'm talking to you folks, and Hatton does not talk about killing anyone.
Yes.
At all.
I don't know if you all remember, if you went back that far, but it was back at the time when we were having our website on a page of Tree of the Golden Light with Nancy Tate and Buck.
Nancy Tate does channel him.
Yes.
I know. And but the thing, it wasn't her Hatton either.
No.
But the Hatton that's authoring these Phoenix journals is a black op.
Yeah.
Whereas the entire 52 books, what they did is they downloaded through Mount Shasta fake ascended masters, and then they programmed them, and then they put them out there so that, you know, the 52 books and the internet connections with those would program the people that believed in the Ashtar Command to believe in something that they programmed all those ascended masters to say and believe. And that is tappable into, and there are myriads and myriads of these people that are channeling, but they don't know they're channeling from that program.
Yeah,
it's that convoluted, and the Hatton, you know, material. They have a Sananda Emmanuel in that book.
Yes,
and then this lady who was connected with the bell ringers, she was writing emails and sending.
Doris and E.J. Ecker.
No. No, oh. This was another lady that was connected with the bell ringers. And they emailed, that woman emailed us that she connected with Sananda Manuel. And the Sananda Manuel said that the King of Swords was a demon, and that Sananda Emmanuel, in 3 days, he would be dead. And then she emailed us that Sananda Emmanuel killed him. That is exactly what happened, and Mark was just going, oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So this is
none of that.
Not cool. And
none of that stuff happened.
No. The king said, hello, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Rama talks to him every day.
I talk to the King of Swords almost every day. And all of the things that are going on right now are at such a deep core level that has to do with various groups that have been contacted by all kinds of interdimensional beings from every realm and then some. Yet, this is the place where what I know for my reality as truth, when you are in contact with these beings and you feel those solfeggio tones that stimulate the heart chakra, the high heart, that is only about ecstatic joy and love, not about fear and control and domination, that is the real deal. Anything else is coming from these pre-programmed programs that even so far as, you know, there are stories out there. It's on this in5d.com and many other websites. You know, Ted Cruz is looking into this right now. And it's got to do with this transhumanist agenda where they literally want to insert soul matrix into android bodies, just like in The Matrix, just like in some of these other movies, like in The Avengers, The Age of Ultron. You know, Ultron kept building these different bodies to put his consciousness in, yet it's not about building any form of a body. It's about consciousness doesn't necessarily need a body. It is just plasma energy like the sun. I passed the talking stick.
This stuff we're discussing right now has to do with, you know, the questions of people, you know, like where can they find information like what we're talking about? Where is the, you know, the evidence on the internet? You're not going to find it anywhere.
No.
There are people like Katrina Vandenhoevel, and she said something. She said that these black ops, the dark side, they have their terminal clones they have their terminal clones well programmed.
Yes, and perfected.
And perfected. And that's what they're doing when they're talking about Hillary Clinton. That's a terminal clone.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of them, but they're terminal. In other words, they're only programmed to a certain agenda. And, you know, the only way that we hear somebody that knows everything about Nassar is Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is going out there, and he made a very interesting, astute, well, actually it was a caller that called in today, and Tom Hartman, he said, when they're talking about Hillary Clinton being the best, most experienced person, and then this guy said, yeah, she's the most experienced person to keep the agenda that we have been living with going.
Yeah.
And then Bernie Sanders is the most experienced one in creating a new creative pathway to freedom, which we do not have now.
Yeah, wow.
That is very powerful.
And that's being made manifest as we move with the energy of what Bernie is doing by just simply telling the truth that has to be told. And at a certain point, when he is in the right position, he will talk about the galactics and the whole other slice of the story. And, you know, I'll just say he has to be in the right position.
Yeah. I just want to put a little note out to BBS Radio in the background that we should be getting our guest, if we could give him a call. I don't know whether we're bringing him in via Skype, or I think we're probably calling him directly. So,
is there a board there?
Well, there's a board. If I wrote something here and Marita didn't see it, so I'm just asking BBS to pull that together.
How come we don't see anything on that board? We don't see anything on that board. Did you write something? I didn't see anything.
I did.
Oh.
So hang on, everybody, for a second. Okay, very good. That's what we wanted to hear.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't worry, be happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Well, you can be especially happy, everyone. I'm not sure where Marita is, but this is Kathy in the background, and we do have our special guest, our well-beloved guest, Michael King, in the background. And so we welcome you, Michael.
Thank you. I enjoy talking to you.
And I am here, too, so we have Kathy and me both, and you, so we'll... we may each be asking you questions, and we will also give a phone number out here that if people choose to call in and ask questions, they can do that. And I'll go ahead and do that now, and then we may do it later again as well. But 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. And this is free for the United States and Canada. So, Michael, we welcome you. We always enjoy seeing what you have to say. And as I say, Kathy and I are both on the line here, and so we'll ask questions and tell us what you'd like to share with us tonight.
Okay. Well, I always enjoy chatting with this group, so you guys are such a great group of souls doing such a great job. And so I thought, since this was something spur of the moment, it occurred to me that I haven't given you the latest update on my garden experiment this year. I wanted you to know that I pulled off over 1,000 pounds of produce from probably something close to 1,200 square feet, including all the aisles and so forth. That included 4 fruit trees, and 361 pounds of tomatoes, and a variety of things from pumpkins and squashes to lettuces and cilantro and carrots and onions and garlic, and a number of other things, goji berries and raspberries and strawberries and blueberries, and which was watermelon, and I mean a lot of nettles leaf, and anyway, miscellaneous things.
Do you sell some of that, Michael, or is this all consumed by your family?
Well, we did give a lot away. We didn't sell any. Used some of the nettles in the business, And we gave a lot to our family. Barbara's got seven kids and a bunch of grandkids, so they ended up with some of the big items. And we ate a lot of it, and then we dehydrated a good amount of it, powdered some of the tomatoes, and can now place them into soups and various things, dehydrated powders, and we saved them just for that potential day where we might need them. You know, never know. So anyway, it was enjoyable to watch, given it was the first year in this location. And a late start, because I was building garden beds. I was growing dirt the whole winter and then building raised beds about 2 feet high. We built 12, 13 of those, and then seeded them sort of mid-summer in some cases and earlier in some. And you know, we have something of a cold evenings here in Ashland. We're high desert, and so we have dry and cold at night, but warm, you know, average warmth to hot in the summertime. And so it's not ideal growing conditions, but, it works. And, it was just a great year. And from that,
I learned... When you were talking about your... You're building the soil 2 feet high, and you've built like bins or wood on the side to contain all of that. How do you, when you do all of these, is that something that the reason, I think maybe explain to people why you make it 2 feet deep?
Root depth is one of the secrets to high produce yield. Which means soft soil root depth. And there's two ways you can get it. One is you build a raised bed. And the other way is you use a boatload of compost teas with a very broad spectrum of microbial influences. And that will eventually convert soil. It takes longer that way to convert soil into really soft, very... Easy for the roots to penetrate deep and very nutrient dense. So microbial life is the secret. In this case, I wanted to build it up and so I could layer in straw, manures, the compost, coffee grounds, and so forth I was getting locally, and I didn't have the alfalfa during this period, but I've acquired some sense, which I think is superior in some respects to straw, if you're going to build it into your soil as you're layering up. And so during the winter, I was just using all these goodies and building big mountains in my where I wanted a garden bed the next spring. So I did that during the winter, and they just composted this packed full of worms. So it's lots of worm castings built in. I didn't need to disturb those mountains, you know, because they're only a couple of feet high. I just knocked off the tops and then built up a really premium layer with additional straw and some bark-free compost, purchased compost. But I had to make sure that it was bark-free because my education, my trial and error, and to my great chagrin, everywhere I've used a barky compost medium, it stunts the growth of the plants, the yield is worse, and the proneness to disease is greater. So,
why have you, rather than, you know, just making a compost pile, and whether you're putting the biodynamic preps in it or whether you're just doing other kinds of things, what is the advantage of doing what you're doing rather than just having your compost pile out in the yard?
It contains it in a way so I can create aisles, for one.
Okay.
So because you know how if you build up a pile, it kind of rounds down and falls, you know, into a heap. So now I'm kind of wasting space. I want root depth for the full 6x6 square or something like that. So that's one advantage.
And then you have to move it out of the compost pile into where you need it. So you're just composting it right where you want it. I get that.
And I think that's smart, because there is another kind of rule of thumb here, that if you dig, if you do any kind of plowing or digging into a soil, you lose some of the nitrogen and you disturb some of the microbes, specifically the plowing method, which is very unadvised, because it breaks up the fungi network. Mm-hmm. It kills a lot of the microbial nests, and the worms get chewed up. It just disrupts. It's like having a tornado come through your neighborhood all of a sudden. So those little critters, you know, they're working on something that's, you know, some leaf or some soil medium or some manures in the soil, and they leave behind this wonderful a nutrient base and microbial density, so that when you plant next to it, it's undisturbed. It's got the right fungi potentials for just that plant. You know, in other words, the plant will, you know, select its own and start propagating specific fungi for its own root system. So you're giving them the fastest, best chance to do all of that it knows how to do best without disturbing it.
Okay.
So, anyway, what was interesting to me, I tried hard to put the fewest amount of tomato plants in one bed. It was a 5-foot by 6-foot bed, 2 feet deep. And so I was planning to put maximum of 4, but we had some extras, and Barbara wanted to get them in the ground. So I think we ended up with about 8 tomato plants in that one bed, and about 6 or 8 in another bed, and then 2 more stragglers somewhere in other beds. And that's where the 361 pounds came from, because we were 8 foot tall everywhere and massive. And so one particular tomato plant, probably it was the largest one, yeah, for sure. And it was, if I had put it in the center, it would have consumed the whole 5x6 area and gone up 8 or more feet, because I had buried it deep. It was fairly tall to begin with. It was, when we transplanted it from our greenhouse, it was probably, you know, I think it was at least 1 foot tall. And so I buried it deep. I left the leaves and the arms on, and buried it deep. And then, so I just had a little bit sticking out the top, and it was a little closer to the edge than I would have preferred, because it would have been far better in the center. But anyway, it grew a base that was about 2 inches in diameter under the soil, and arms that went off in 4 or 5 directions, that some of which were 1.5 inches in diameter. And then it went up, and eventually I had to cut all my tomatoes back just so I could see where the fruit were. But they were just massive in this cubicle. And so it produced, I have no idea how many pounds, but, you know, we just weighed the whole mass, and it came up to 361. So that's a lot of work to dehydrate, slice, and utilize or give away. So we won't be planting that many tomatoes next year.
Sounds like you're doing something right to get that much poundage off of that few plants. So obviously,
I have to say, I never heard that concept of, you know, if you plow the field, that you're destroying all those microbes and, you know, all the insects and worms that are good for the soil. I don't know why that seems so obvious to me, and I never heard of it or even thought of it.
It's true.
Yeah, that's part of the organic production. We just do not want the mobile plowing. And so Michael's, what he's telling you is what we do in organic field production.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So here's a couple of interesting tidbits that inspired me to go about it this way. One of them came along after the fact, but it makes a lot of sense. There's a Southern California grower that last year, articles came out on him. I don't know how large his farm was, but it's like a big ag farm, probably smaller, but maybe only, I don't know, 10 or more acres. But he was getting like 10 times the produce with one-tenth the water use. I could be wrong about the multiplication, but it's not hard to outperform a big ag grower with if you do things a certain way. We do know that organic growing methods, specifically the no-plow method, can generate at least 70 to 100% more than a conventional farm. And then every year, if it's treated a certain way, that will continue to grow. It'll continue to increase. And so, and I've seen this statistic in other farms that did the exact same thing that I'm about to describe, year after year, and every year their corn crop, in this case, got greater and greater number of bushels per acre. And I think it was up to like 420 bushels an acre or something, last count I heard. But this the method is really layering on top. And so there's one of the great secrets. And you instead of plowing, you bring in, you actually want to grow the stuff right on your land. You want to bring in leaves, foliage, forget the barky stuff that comes out of these landfill-type compost methods. But if you've got lots of trees, specifically the leaves, any kind of grass thing like ornamental grasses that get very tall and provides a lot of silica, a lot of humus matter for the soil, and you bury that in there, straw, alfalfa, mix it with dirt. If you're going to put anything leafy in the soil, you want to make sure it gets at least coated or topped, you know, very thin layer topped with some dirt before you layer another layer. The reason is so that the dirt, the microbes in the dirt will break everything down like two or three times faster than if it's just sitting on top of the soil. So you mix them up, any kind of food scraps, coffee grounds, manures, mix them up with garden soil or just any kind of soil. It doesn't have to be great soil, because the foliage will make it great soil. The worms eating the foliage in that dirt will make it really good quality soil. And then the inoculants, I use the liquid gold, which is a spectrum of minerals and microbials, and it's castings from my worm bins and, you know, the best of the best we can put in. I've got soldier fly larvae, which is a high nitrogen worm juice, and so we've got the regular wigglers and other earthworms and so forth contributing to the whole shebang. So it's really very nutrient dense and microbially dense, and then it's got tons of minerals because I use all the different kinds of earthen sources, and especially the ormus-bearing earthen sources, where that's one of the great secrets or advantages. It's not really a secret, but it's one of the great keys to the advantage of liquid gold and why it produces higher yields, higher fruiting, higher flowering, larger, healthier plants without, you know, far less chance of bug infestations, because it's, you could say it's giving it vital chi. Ormus empowers your own chi. It's great for working out in martial arts or yoga or any kind of exercise, or just, you know, desk work. If you take ormolite or vitalite, these are excellent sources to improve your chi, and that helps the hormonal balance and the consciousness raising and so forth. So giving that to a plant, the plant becomes healthier, wiser, you could say, because they're constantly collecting information from the heavens and the earth, And if your saliva and sweat are in the soil, then obviously you know it's going to start growing specifically for your unique nutritional requirements or health problems. And that's why, you know, I believe that by growing all of your own food in certain ways, you can eliminate all of your health issues as well as awaken deeper spiritual aspects within your being just by that connection of love to the earth. And so you connect with God through nature in that fashion. So, it's a great passion to do it just because it's so simple and it solves practically every problem in the world. Now, you realize that we have, you know, agendas to move people into big cities. Well, the real answer, obviously, there's a reason for that. We all know it's not a good reason. But you see, it tells you that if you do the opposite, then that must mean that it's going to be good for us. And then here's why putting people out into the farms and, you know, what Russia is doing today, they're giving away, I think, two to five hectares or something to anybody who's willing to farm it. By putting human beings in crowded cities off into the wild wilderness areas, the arable land, the forests, to manage these areas, you know, as long as they are committed to manage them, they will clear the brush. They will cut down the excessive number of trees. If you've ever seen forests, you know that there's just too many trees in most forests that they can't, the trees that are there just can't spread out and grow because they got tiny ones coming up in between and they're real sickly and, you know, it causes a real problem. But a properly managed forest, you know, spreads out 30, 40 feet in either direction, or, you know, good trees. We have 200-foot tall pines in this neighborhood. And so, you know, you can have some very large trees, very healthy trees, and with low competition. And then as a plant, as a tree, as its age is at, you know, its maximum, it's time for it to die, that's when it wants to be cut down. And so you just manage it with wisdom and sensitivity and by asking permission of your plants. You know, is it okay if I harvest you? Is it okay? Is this time? And they will give you that indication. That having that kind of relationship with the land, of course, that's something that's trained into a person, you know, consciously. But ideally speaking, if we were to even just go through the motions of giving 5 acres of land to everybody who's willing to cultivate it and plant at least a quarter of it in trees, or maintain at least a quarter or half of it in trees, and have a garden, have a home, and mandate that they have their own water supply, build a pond, which is a critical part of the microbial development. The trees provide the leaf matter, the layering on top of that eliminates the need for plowing and softening the soil, because those leaves going into the soil or on top of the soil breaking down is going to create a soft humus matter and a microbial nest. And the diversity of trees is very important to this, you know, deciduous and evergreen, both, as well as a number of grasses and, you know, various kinds of fruits and various kinds of produce. All of these things contribute richly to soil, because on a small 2-acre plot like this, you have so much produce, such high yields and such quality produce. You can't possibly eat it or even give it away. You could sell a certain amount, but it's so abundant and so rich in terms of taste and quality and longevity on the shelf, etc., produce grown in this fashion, it just far, far surpasses anything you could buy from a conventional and even organic farms these days. So,
hey, Michael, let me ask you this. We've got a lot of people who are aren't fortunate to be out in the country where we have a lot of space, but most everybody has a little room around their home, and little, and instead of having to cut the grass, you could have a garden. But if somebody wants to do this on a small basis and get started, could you give them some ideas of what to do? I mean, and everything you've said so far I know applies, but how can they do this so that it's and even they, if they have to grow it in bins on their patio, what would people need to do to get started so that this is a practical thing for everybody to be able to do it?
Okay, now if you have a little bit of land, you can build a raised bed, and you want to do it that way, you can build it out of a number of pieces of materials. You can build out of rocks, which usually you get grasses and stuff coming up in between, so it's not perfect. You can build it out of retainer wall bricks that you can buy in Home Depot or wherever. We just put a circular one out in our front yard and put a cactus in the middle and filled it with soil. Or you can build it out a real inexpensive raised bed out of using cedar fencing material, which is, you know, just it's just under an inch thick, 6 inches wide, and 5 or 6, 8 feet tall long, and some 2x2 square, you know, poles to stick in the ground and to screw everything to, and all the corners and in the middle of the boards, you know, if they're long. And you can make any size. You can make, you know, cut them down to 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot wide, 4 foot wide, or a square, 6 foot by 6 foot or whatever. But they're relatively inexpensive. They're like $2 to $3 a 6 foot, 8 foot section. And and I would stack, you know, 3 or 4 of them high to get a 2 foot bed, and then it's the layering. Now, what do you put inside? So, if you've got the time, willing to take the time, then you gradually layer it with some vegetative things that you need. Something that's got, that's going to create air holes in your lower levels. So that's where some kind of a straw, or if you have tall ornamental grasses, that will work. You can also just cut your yard and utilize that, but you want to mix that not too thick, because it will mat and heat up, really, you know, get hot as you're composting. So you mix that with soil. And so where would you get your soil? Well, if you take, and if you don't have access to, say, a quality compost that's easy to buy or import, then, you know, dig a hole right where you're going to create your bed. And you just bucket that soil. And then you start layering in with a lot of vegetative matter, so your grasses. If you could get straw, or if you can get a quality alfalfa, it's even better. That's going to be hot too, so it's thin layers, and then you can put your put a thin layer, like an inch deep of soil, any kind of soil, or a bag of store bought potting soil in there, pre mix, or go to some of these growing yards, these places, the grower houses, where they have all kinds of additives for soil and they mixtures, and try to come up with something that has no bark in it, other than, you know, maybe coconut fiber instead of forest bark, and then mix that, you know, use that as your potting soil to layer between all of these goodies. Use your kitchen scraps. If you've got a local organic coffee shop, I wouldn't use conventional, because the chemical-laced coffee grounds are probably not the best. But the if you can find a good organic coffee shop and then put layer that in thin layers, you know, because coffee grounds are also going to get hot. And you don't want to get more than a half inch thick or so, or else it will start to putrefy if you, you know, under certain conditions. So you always want air, in, you know, as you're building up. And so you've dug a hole that could be only 1 foot deep, and you put that in buckets, and you save those buckets off to the side, and you start layering the stuff in and use some of that the soil in order to just get soil mixed. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be really deep, but just as long as whatever you're putting in there gets somewhat mixed. It could be a very thin layer of soil. It's okay. And if you've got manures that are high-quality, non-chemicalized, non-antibiotic cows or horses, cow manure is ideal. Llama manure is actually better. You know, alpaca or goat or rabbit manure is high in nitrogen. So these are all possibilities. I would not use cat or dog. I would not use anything that eats meat, primarily because of the pathogens that are, you know, I wouldn't use human manure either, even though normally human urine would be very wise. But we have so much chemicals in our environment and in our bodies, someone, you know, you're, that's going to go into any kind of anything you go put into. But generally speaking, you want to have some consciously raised animals that you have access to, some friends or some farmers, and, you know, utilize that in the best way you know how. Otherwise, you'll if you get some of these compost bags, it's already going to have some of that stuff in it from the shops. You just use what you got. And you don't have to be, you don't have to do all of this. Just some of it helps. And then, because once you've layered it all up and you're as high as you want to go, it's going to compact down again. And it may take you 2 or 3 months to layer it up, you know, during the fall and winter, or even now. You can start right now, and by if you do use the soil properly, you're, it will be mostly soil and dirt. It'll be certainly plantable by spring, because it only takes 3 to 6 weeks, you know, 2 months usually at the most, 3 months max, to really break down into high-quality soil and be just loaded with worms, which is, you know, intense fertility and microbial life is the worms. So what you're doing is you're providing food for the worms and aeration for things to stay aerobic, meaning oxygenated at the deeper levels. And so the worms will do the rest. And
do they need to go get fishing worms or whatever in order to get it started if they have not had good soil on, in their yard?
Actually, that's a really good question. It's not absolutely necessary if you will take any kind of produce, rotten produce, like watermelons or fruits, squashes, pumpkins, you can even use some honey water, you know, raw honey is superb. You could use even just sugar water, you know, just to inoculate the very base of your bed and then layer this these kitchen scraps down there and especially the sweet things, the starchy and sweet things. Avocados, they love avocados. They will come from your neighbor's house. They will come from a block away. If it's rich enough, there's a scent. I mean, it has to have an odorous smell. I mean, we do know that worms will travel to, say, broken septic pipes from all over the neighborhood. But if you have enough food, there's always worms in the soil. Even if you have a lot of chemicals on the surface, they're down deep, and they will come up. They're always in the tree roots. So if you've got any, you can really watch, you can see, you can create a really dense worm bin by just digging a hole near a tree and in the shade and filling it with some of these scraps, mix it with some dirt and some, you know, foliage, leafy, grassy kind of stuff, things that break down easy. We're not talking barky things. So it could be stems from a tomato plant, you know, this, that they'll break down pretty fast. It could be sunflower stems. It could be sunflower heads without the seed and, you know, things like that. They'll break down really well. They'll convert. They create aeration. And the worms will come up, and they'll find it. So, you know, just in a matter of, you know, 1, 2, 3 months, you're going to have a whole mass of worms, and then they multiply every, I think it's every 3 months you get 2 or 3 times the population.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a good question. So the other way to enhance microbial population and worm population is through compost teas. Now, if you can find any kind of herbal product, not food scraps in this case, it'll be, you know, nettles, alfalfa, nettles, comfrey nettles, alfalfa are phenomenal sources for this microbial brew. And all you have to do is put some of these herbs, just about any herb will do. And the more herbs, the different variety of herbs, the better. You just don't want a food source that will grow really sour fast, because herbs tend to last a little bit longer in water. And you will put it in the water, in unchemicalized water, or if you don't have a chemical-free water, then put it in a bucket, stir it so it swirls, and that will start to restructure the water, and that will start releasing the chemical compounds, and then let it sit overnight. If you have some clay source, we use our silica-rich clay, I'll throw it into my bucket of water, I'll swirl it around so it's all cloudy. That right then and there sucks up all the chemicals. It structures the water. It mineralizes the water. And then I just let it sit for an hour or more, and then I feel like I can use that in my garden, or I can use that to soak my compost in, my herbs. And so I'll get my nettles, comfrey, and as many leaves from the garden, from the variety of plants that were grown, or a variety of ornamental plants around my house, and a little bit of grass, not a whole bunch, but you know, you need, I don't know, it almost doesn't matter how much you put in there, as long as how long you leave it that matters. And here's what, a lot of people leave it for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't necessarily recommend that, because I don't think it's necessary. What you want it to do is start fermenting. So 24 hours, and you don't want to get it to start going too sour. So, you know, you could even just do this, you know, soak it for 6, 8, 12 hours, or just overnight. Stir it up. Add some, preferably some genuinely raw honey, not with all the Cairo syrup and stuff they used to put in it, but the real raw honey from a reliable harvester, and just some organic cane sugar, you know, the Brown's types of organic cane sugars, because they've got minerals, or a little bit of molasses if you want to. But it doesn't take much, and what that does is it feeds the microbes, and they start multiplying like no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the enzymes start going to town to eat up this fibrous material of the herbs, and it starts producing various kinds of fungi, various kinds of, you know, microbial nests, different kinds of microbes, and enzymes, proliferation, and then the sweets just make everything grow in there. So I like to use compost teas that are only a few hours old, as long as I have some sugars in there. And then I spray that or pour that on the soils that I'm composting. And you want to keep your compost piles not so soggy that they drip, you know, they mush heavily like wet mush, but you want so that they hold the ball you pick up your compost pile, it holds the ball, and it's moist, that it will hold, you let go of the ball, and it stays in your hand as a ball. So, you know, that, or just a little more moist for worms works. And that's an ideal moisture level. And then that that compost tea that you're spraying on the soil or pouring on the soil, and you can dilute this down quite a bit. You know, once you've got the microbes and the beginnings going and the sweets are in there, now you can, if you've got more clean, you know, unchemicalized water, you can dilute it down quite a bit because it just takes minute traces of this. I learned from a guy who's a phenomenal compost maker, and I'll tell you some secrets here in a minute. And you pour that on your compost piles and on the plants that you want to really make dynamic at the root system. And you can spray it on the leaves, you know, as long as it's not smelling too bad. And it still should smell fairly decent. And once it starts going sour, it just means it's getting anaerobic, which is not the goal. That's why I say 6, 8 hours, 12 hours, and then go ahead and put it on your crops. So, because it will continue to proliferate from then on. And then you put it on your compost piles. Now you've got this capacity to really microbially enhance your worm bins, your compost. And that's going to do more than anything to break down the fibrous matters and convert soil into very dynamic, nutritious soil for your roots, soft, nutritious soil for the roots. And so that by the time you put your seeds in the ground or you put your starts in the soil and the roots start getting down to those deeper levels, it's well broken down and it's microbially dense and it's been feeding off of this compost teas on a regular basis. You can, you know, feed your soils every 2, 3, 4 days, every week. It depends on how warm it is or how cold it is and how wet the soil is. So you'd sort of keep it at that ideal level. Worms like it a little more moist. They can handle fairly moist. I mean, they can even survive in solid water for a length of time, but then they don't. So you want to have it not soggy, but you want to have it moist and not too dry because they don't like dry. And then the microbes feed in moisture. They don't do quite so well. But if you have something that's starting to mold, make sure you get it under the soil. Bury it in soil. Don't let any part of that plant that's molding show its face above the ground. Obviously, mold is very dangerous, but that's nature's way of breaking the RNA down inside a plant to convert it to soil. It's necessary. It's good. And it went in the process of converting moldy plants into soil, it makes nutrient density. It puts nutrient density in your soil. It makes nutrients more bioavailable to your roots. So it's an essential part of a compost pile. You just don't want to be breathing it. And
Michael, I have a text question here that somebody's texted me. They said, should they try to put it in the sun, in the shade, which side of the house? Could you give some, and of course part of that would be depending upon what kind of climate they're living in, but they're asking about where to create this, and this is somebody who lives in town.
Okay. Then depending on the type of plant you're going to put in that garden bed, if you're making your compost pile in the bed you're going to use, that will vary based on the type of plant. Some of them require shade. Some of them require sun. Some of them require prefer mixed. So as an example, a lettuce gets morning sun, and you know it can handle spotted shade. And then when it gets really hot, you know, the later afternoon sun, you want shade. You want it fully shaded. So, but if it's a tomato plant, it needs full sun. So it's going to go on the south side as much sun as you can possibly give it. The lettuces could go on the side of the house that is on the, say, east side of the house. The course, anything that handles, I'm not thinking of something, but the north side is obviously your most shaded part. But under a tree, we plant kale and lettuces under our apple trees and up against the east side of the house. And then the front of our, we also have a shade problem because we got a big cedar tree there, and it's 100 feet tall or something and is wide. And so it shades certain parts of the afternoon. So we work around that. We've got a, we have a south side where we can put a certain amount, and then our whole garden happens to be on the east side of our house. So the shaded parts, we put, you know, those things that need shade, can't handle a lot of sun. And then we try to do the best we can with everything else. And we have a deer problem. So that's another factor, you know. So, and you got raccoon problems and that sort of thing. So raccoons happen to love grapes, and they love berries, and some, I don't know what else they'll eat, but they'll eat your chickens. So we have chickens. So, you know, you really have
a lot of deer out here where I am. And I'll tell you something that you can use that's quite simple, is the Irish Spring Soap, the original Irish Spring Soap. I take a bar and cut it into like 1-inch chunks, and then just like take a 6-inch piece of fabric and like a knapsack and just put a string around that and tie it. You can tie it onto a stick and stick it in the ground. But the deer will not bother if you've got that, or if you've got cages on your tomato plants, you could actually use that, you know, on the outside of the cage. But that's a simple thing, and of course, what I read about, it said that young men should not use that soap because it would make them sterile. But so maybe the animals know that, but there's something about that Irish Spring original soap. I've used that for probably 10 years, and it's the simplest thing that I found, because I mean the deer go right across my garden. They're present, and of course we have a lot of them back in the woods, but they come up to the garden all the time. And then for your things that are the rabbits, and they don't like it either. I have a lot of rabbits here too, and so I put the lower, tie it onto something. So that's a simple thing that it's not, you're not putting chemicals in your soil or on your plants, but you're just hanging them around, and they don't like that scent. So that's
fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah, I wonder what that is in there. When I heard about the men's part of it, that's why I thought maybe that's a chemical of some sort, you know. Maybe it's just a essential oil. I don't know.
I really have never tried to figure it out. Somebody told me this many years ago, and I will go get, and they say always to use the original, and I've never tried anything else because that's what I was told to do. But it's a simple way, and interesting, on a pear tree, I didn't have a stake, and I tied it on a branch, and it kept the deer away from there. However, the leaves that were between where I tied that on and the end of the branch, it died.
Oh, wow.
So there's something there that's not compatible with nature, but that's, so I wouldn't recommend tying it on a tree. But just on a stick in the ground, and you can, if you have these, we have a lot of these stakes we use around here on our lanes, so that when the snow plow, they can tell where the lane is. You know, there's just orange sticks that you put in the ground, so that in the wintertime you can see where to plow. So I take those out and stick them in the ground and tie my soap to the top of those, and they're like 3 feet tall, and that mm-hmm. keeps that's how I keep the deer away. So
interesting. Okay,
Michael, how long have you been in the location? This is your new place, so it's not even a year yet, is it?
That's right. We're now here about a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
And so I think, you know, we're coming on our second year.
And you're happy, so you've got more space. It's just that you had to start your garden all over again after all that work.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say one thing. With everything that you're sharing about these layers and the appropriate things to combine, I mean, liquid gold is expensive. Clay is expensive. It seems to me that, you know, this is expensive food, dear.
There's no doubt. It is like that, and part of it has to do with the fact that we, what it takes to make it and what it takes to excavate these things and our limited supply at the moment. So we are in the silica-rich world. While it turns out that it's the best clay that we know of for gardens, and I'm now testing that and proving that with an oxidation reduction potential meter, testing the various kinds of clays to see which one has highest exchangeability, cation exchange capacity in the soil, which is actually more of a calculation of electrolytes in the clay. But we're watching that the sacred clay does perform really well, and part of it is that those two readings, the cation exchange, which means how the minerals bond with each other and change something at the root level to allow the nutrients to be taken up by the roots. Silica is involved, various electrolytes are involved, certain minerals are involved, and the clay enhances the microbial life in the soil, so it doesn't take a whole bunch. You know, we're talking a tablespoon per square foot on the surface. And so we're observing that it should pay for itself many times over in terms of crop yield, primarily because I have observed that if I start my seeds under the influence of silica-rich, that I end up with three times the growth in the first 4 to 6 weeks than on a soil that doesn't have it in there, you know, assuming an average soil. Mm-hmm. And looking back on that experiment when I did it first, I made the mistake of putting like 50% aged, very old bark, aged like 80-year-old bark, with a topsoil and sand type mixture, and it just didn't do well. But wherever I put the silica rich, the growth compared to the plants that did not do well, the silica rich made them like two or three times faster in growth and bigger and obvious higher germination rate. I saw it in carrots. It was like carrots are not that easy to get to germinate. And so I did one with and one without. And sure enough, the one with had almost 100% germination rate and of carrots, and it was just big and bushy and tall. The other one was just sparse and small. That was very striking to me, because the first time I'd actually seen the contrast. And so that was not liquid gold that did that. It was silica rich.
So are you direct seeding that into your beds, or are you starting them
In my case, I'm mixing into the soil at the deeper level, because I'll mix a wheelbarrow full of soil mm-hmm. and I'll blend it with worm castings and clay and coconut fiber and various things. So I make my own soil. I mix straw and alfalfa and everything in there. And so I'll mix it all up, and then I'll put it into the bed and layer it in with coffee grounds and kitchen scraps and more straw, etc. So I'll put the clay gets in there, and then I'll soak it. You know, preferably, I don't always do this, but the ideal is to spray even a dilute solution of liquid gold on it. It doesn't take a lot, a tablespoon per gallon. You can even go a teaspoon per gallon of water and a light spray, you know, every now and then as you're layering up. It's not totally essential, because you can also compensate for that by adding some liquid gold to your compost tea and then letting it soak down. So either way, getting the microbes and the minerals and the ormus properties at the deeper layer is helpful.
And to answer your question, Kathy, about is this expensive to do, you can either spend your money on healthy food or doctor bills and other kinds of health things. And so maybe I justify things this way, but for myself, you know, it's my observation that you can eliminate a lot of health challenges by doing good food. So, that's as I say, I'm probably biased but that's what has worked for me.
And I concur with that one, especially here's as an example. Okay, in my 1,200 square feet, let's say. It's actually roughly 1,000 square feet in the garden, and then the trees, which I'm taking into account the diameter of a tree, fruit tree, and I'm guesstimating here. But let's say you get 1 pound per square foot in your garden, and that includes all your aisle spaces and everything. Well, 1,000 pounds, if you had that, or 500 pounds of produce, what are you paying for groceries today? $2, $3, $4, $5 a pound. So what are you making from that? And is that going to offset? You know, once you've built your garden, and you can build it fairly inexpensively, and you just sort of slowly build up your soils over time with just the throwaways from your kitchen, and then you're talking... how much are you going to get back that you don't buy in the store? So is it, you know, $500, $1,000, depends on the size. If you can, one single bed could produce, in my case, probably over 100 pounds of tomatoes. Of course, you have to sell that to recoup it, but if you just had a single tomato plant that went up 8 foot tall because of what you did to your soil, like ours did, and it produced, you know, 20 pounds of tomatoes over the season, or 40 pounds, I got 30 pounds off of one that was only half mature, because they were all green when winter hit. It was the last one to get planted, and I could have gotten close to 100 pounds off of that if it had gone full season. One plant. So if you can accomplish similar kinds of things, I had 11 pumpkins, squashes are pretty prolific, cucumbers are massive. I mean, they just go on and on and on forever practically. So you'll always have food, and if you really add up the difference, you have so much to give away, and you'll always have food for yourself, and you can cut your food bill at least, you know, a quarter, a third, in some cases a half, or more. Ideally,
and when you were talking about how many cucumbers you get, one of the things that a neighbor shared with me to take a cup of raw honey and one cup of raw vinegar, and then you can add a tablespoon of salt, and then whatever spices you want is whatever you're making, but you do not heat it. You just stir all that up, and that will do 12 cups of cucumbers. You do not can them. You just put them in jars and put them in your refrigerator, and they keep all winter. And then you have all of your good bacteria to have with every meal. And that also works. You can, instead of doing the cucumbers, I've also found that, you know, you can do carrots and onions and beets, anything like this, and it will give you your good bacteria for your digestion. And so those are things that when you buy a pint of that, around here it's about $9 a pint, And here, if you have, you know, one 12 cups of cucumbers will make 3 quarts, and you don't do anything except stir it and put it in the jar, and it's so simple to do, and yet you have something that's going to be very, very good for your digestive tract for the whole winter. So,
what was that recipe again?
A cup of raw honey, a cup of raw vinegar, you know, good vinegar, and then a tablespoon of salt, and then you add, say, whatever onion, you want a cup of onion or whatever you want with that, but that's 12 cups of sliced cucumbers, and then you, if you like mustard seed or celery seed or whatever kinds of spices, but that's a basic recipe, and then I say you can put peppers in it, you can put whatever vegetables that you like. If you want to use your beets or carrots, or shred those, I shred those so that they will be thin enough that they get fermented easily. But it's such a simple thing to do, and you do not want to heat it, because you don't want to kill the raw enzymes that are in your raw honey and raw vinegar.
Nice.
So, Marita, do you leave it outside? I mean, outside the refrigerator, and let it sit outside the refrigerator?
No. You put it in the refrigerator. You just put your lid on it. It doesn't, you know, you're not trying to seal it. You just put it in the refrigerator, and, you know, it will go ahead and ferment. And it keeps all winter.
How long does it take for that process of fermentation in the refrigerator?
Oh, it's probably 2 to 3 weeks to begin with.
Uh-huh.
But then it's a simple thing that you can have that puts that good bacteria in the intestinal tract for all winter.
I'll be darned. So probiotic at home.
Yes, and so instead of buying probiotics to get that good, you know, the Acidophilus bifidum bulgaricum, all of those things in the gut, you have a good food, and that takes care of it, and so you don't have to spend money on probiotics
or digestive bitters, Michael.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Or it could be like instead of sauerkraut, right, Marita?
You can do the same thing, yes, the sauerkraut. And I do the same thing with my my sauerkraut. I find that I stick that in jars and put that in the refrigerator as well, rather than you can leave it in the crock. I leave it 3 to 6 weeks in the crock, and then I usually put it in jars. Otherwise, sometimes it will get softer. And it's not as crispy and crunchy as it is if you've got space that you can do that in. I have a second refrigerator in my garage that I use for this kind of stuff. So,
I see. Hot thickens. Okay.
Well, and of course, I do more than what a lot of people will do, because I also have other family that likes it, and so I'm not I'm not just doing it for myself always. So. That's why I need a second fridge.
Thank you, thank you. I noticed that they in the store now, they have the sauerkraut and for like type A's and stuff like that. Vinegar's too strong, so they put it in lemon juice, and it works just as good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you've raised a lot of good thoughts and ideas and questions for people tonight. And what else do you want to share with us before we close out this section?
Well, I guess I'll just say that I feel like our whole world is moving in a very positive direction, even though it looks a little rocky. I feel like there's a lot of consciousness on the planet. You guys are contributing to that, and it's growing by the day. And there's some, you know, we go through a rough spot, but that rough spot turns into a catalyst for deeper, greater awareness and deeper growth within all of us. And then, of course, the harder the dark side tries, the faster they fall. And so we're seeing a rapid decomposition, you could say, of one side of the fence, and a rapid acceleration of the bright side. So I'm very hopeful, even though I think we have, you know, this whole year is going to be turbulent. Next year could be an unusual ride, but very positive in some respects. I think we're going to have sort of a roller coaster kind of ride between now and 2020. There's going to be a lot of wonderful changes happening. And with that, you know, some turbulence. So I guess we just got to hang on and watch and participate in every way we can to be light workers that we are. And reason why the gardening aspect came up, because I feel it's by connecting to the earth in our high-rise balcony or in our little tiny yard, in any way, shape, or form, even if it's one single, you know, growing something, even if it's roses, or some parsley or cilantro or something, that it connects. And so it opens the heart, it awakens our spirit. It's part of what adds to the momentum that's established and growing rapidly on the planet of higher awareness and appreciation for the ecology. And that's the thing that's going to change this planet more than anything, than any, protesting or whatever. It's the fact that we simply get into that meditative state more often. I believe it's been proven you only need about 9,000 people in a concentrated meditative state to put an end to the wars on the planet. So we just have to, for a day anyway, meditating. And so we just have to be in that state more and more in growing ways. And having your health is part of that. Because if we're wigged out on, when the spleen gets off, you get kind of spacey. And you can't really stay focused. And stimulants and sugars and alcohol are the kind of things that whack out that spleen. So by getting your hands in the dirt, it calms you down and grounds you. And so your mind comes back, you can focus again, and then you connect. Your heart opens up and you connect. And so the spiritual side of this starts to develop even faster than it already has been. You guys grow fast here, because you're focused on it. But what happens when you've really got your hands in the soil and you're grounding and connected energetically to Mother Earth, which connects you energetically to, you know, to the whole spiritual thing throughout the solar system and to God itself. So it just happens automatically. That's the way the system was designed. So we might as well utilize it, because it's right outside our back door. and it's powerful. It's so subtle and so commonsensical, and yet it's just remarkable. It's the garden. We had people who would drive up to our house. We happen to have a little parking lot just across from our garden, interestingly enough. And people go to the gym next across the way and various businesses there, and they park there. And I got insight. I mean, someone said, look, I come here every morning early so I can just look at your garden, because it's so peaceful. And it was her meditation. Mm. And we have little kids come up, and they're looking, you know, checking out our chickens, and they're coming up, checking out, but looking at the garden. Got so many compliments, because while there's a neighborhood garden center where a lot of people are growing stuff down the road about half a block away. And the difference between what was growing in that soil compared to what we were growing was so dramatic. I mean, there were some cases ours was, you know, two or three times the size and definitely we had really lush green foliage, and it was just a different ambiance. I mean, I love to see gardens of all kinds, and anyone's an inspiration. Any garden is an inspiration. But the contrast was noticeable, and so people were commenting. They were walking by and saying, we really love what you've done with your garden, and so forth, and bring their little children up to take a look and look at the chickens, the way we raise our chickens. They're extremely healthy, you know, just the way we built out the pen and grow the grass on the inside of the pen so they can't scratch it up with screens over it, and then they get constant grass fed, even though they have to be penned up because it's in the city. But we don't feed them corn or soy or nothing, you know, GMO, and we've got organic grains, very expensive, but we got the best tasting eggs in town. And I had three people tell me I had the best tasting tomatoes they had ever tasted. Well, that kind of shocked me because I never expected to hear that. But they were phenomenally tasting. I have now growing the best tasting cilantro that I have ever tasted. I mean, I had no idea cilantro could be so rich and vitalizing. It just lifts my spirit, and it's got this rich, dark, deep flavor to it. I had never tasted in store-bought cilantro. So what's the difference? It's the soil we just talked about. It's the humus in the soil, the minerals in the soil, the microbes from the worms and so forth. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth it.
Hey, Michael, did you know that I recently, you might have seen it, a lot of people probably have, about the states in the United States that are the most popular, where there are people, which is the state that most people are moving to was the question, and they put them in order. And did you know that Oregon has a 69% increase of influx people coming to live in your state?
Serious.
Number one state.
Wow, the number one state?
Number one.
Oh, my goodness.
Oregon.
That's incredible.
Yes.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful state. There's no question about it. That's amazing to me.
A lot of rain, though, right? Lots of rain.
We have this year. Last year, no. Of course, I'm high desert where we'd normally be dry. But we're making up for it. You know, as far as we're concerned, our drought is over. I don't know how much of it's really getting into the California regions, but we're definitely, you know, northern part gets a lot of rain, way more than we do.
And where are you? What portion of the state?
Just at the bottom. We're 15 miles from the California border.
Oh. So would that be the southern portion of Oregon?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. And the ideal growing climate, supposedly, in Oregon is
Michael,
right at the 45th parallel.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, Michael, isn't it El Nino that's been giving you that rain? And same thing with California. They're getting a lot because of it's a El Nino year.
Uh-huh. Could be. And that's quite a blessing right now.
And how far from the ocean are you?
About 3.5 hours. So we have a mountain range between us and the ocean.
That's what I was thinking. You were on the east side of that range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. In fact, we're in a little bit of a, we have a little mini valley right here. We have mountains on both sides of us. And one mountain that's closest to the south gets a lot of the weather on. So it's packed to the gills with trees, a lot of evergreens and different kinds. Whereas just on the other side of the valley, totally visible from the city, is a lot of farming community, which is, you know, almost no trees on the mountains. It's much drier.
Mm-hmm. Well, we always appreciate you sharing your knowledge, your wisdom with us. And the other thing that we haven't even mentioned tonight, but would you take just a moment and tell people what you do as far as your Vitality Herbs and Clay and what your website is, if they or a phone number if they would want to connect with you, because that's another whole area of discussion. But at least let's make sure people know how to go to the website, etc.
Okay, thank you. And the rest of what we do here was inspired by the realization that if we want to grow spiritually, we have to have a healthy body. And I learned that the hard way personally. I was very sick as a child. My mother, I watched her struggle with her health and mental stability all of her life. And the influence of medical professions and so forth in the family, watching all that. So I chose to devote myself to things that would change lives for the better, whatever that be, and to search out the best of the best that nature had to offer. That's why I believe certain clays have come to us over the years, certain herbal realizations or herbal formulas or ideas and formulas. So I use intuition to assemble the herbal components and intuition to proportion them and note science, but where I really trust nature more than science. I question science. I trust nature. And so we have herbal formulas, and we have clay for detox and mineral nourishment, and we have inner healing methods, which is central to why we stay healthy, so we can be more present inwardly and love our pain and misery into a transformation and heal all that. So the website where you can find out all of the above, there's about 100 articles there. Soon, in a day or two or three, I'm going to publish one on weight loss. This is a big issue for a lot of people, so I'm revealing what's causing it and how to resolve it. Everybody who gets on one of our programs will lose weight and detox the body and clean it out and upgrade their health. So anyway, the website is called Vitality Herbs and Clay.com. It's vitalityherbsandclay.com. And if you want to talk to the office, you just call in at 541-482-9633. That's 541-482-9633. And we have a toll-free number if you want. It's 888-325-1475. 888-325-1475. And so feel free to call us or get on the website, send us an email or whatever. You can talk to Julie anytime if you want, say, ongoing serious situations that you want me to build a program for you. We have a new program now that allows where we are combining regular sessions, like weekly sessions. I'll do an intuitive assessment of all your organs and glands. I can look inside. I can see what's causing an organ or a gland not to function properly, what might be either a physical root cause or a spiritual root cause, and address or suggest things that could work, changes in diet, whatever is needed in the moment. It's very intuitive and somewhat commonsensical. Once you understand a few things about diet and herbs and clays, it's very obvious. So we see rapid turnarounds, usually within 3 weeks to 4 months, fairly quick turnaround in very concerning conditions. And so anyway, you'll see the whole philosophy on the website at the vitalityherbsandclay.com. The articles are there for free. Call the office if you want to set up private consultations, get on a program. Anyway, there you go.
There's so appreciate much information on that website to read. I mean, you can spend a lot of days in your free time reviewing that. So thank you, Michael. We really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your wellness and also just the energy of you being here. So we are grateful that you've taken time to share with us again.
I appreciate the opportunity. I love you guys.
Okay. Yeah, we love you too, Michael.
Okay. Don, did you see my note? Please select some music from my playlist and to close the show. And we will see all of you next Thursday night.